for us to follow. You know, to see an example of someone who knows what it is we're trying to do. You know, I am blessed as a preacher to have been able to watch all my life the example of my father as he preached the gospel, and to be around other men that preach the gospel and follow their examples. And I have been richly benefited as a result of those examples. You know, patterns are important in life, even imperfect ones. And we are fortunate to have many patterns of godly people to go and to go by in making our own lives pleasing to God. In Philippians chapter 3 and verse 17, Paul says, Brethren, join in my example, in following my example rather, and note those who so walk as you have us for a pattern. Paul says, look at us. Look at how we walk. We are setting down a pattern for you. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 3, Peter says, nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, talking about elders, but being examples to the flock. You know, one thing I guess Peter is saying here is certainly that he doesn't want elders that just say, do as I say, not as I do, right? He wants elders that are people that are doing the things that they say, that they are following Jesus' life. In Acts chapter 1 and verse 1, where it says that he both began to do and teach. Not only did he teach things, but he did the things that he taught. And Jesus Christ has never asked you, and he's never asked me or anyone else that has lived upon this earth to ever do anything that Jesus Christ himself did not and was not able to do. And that's why we have a Savior. We have a high priest. We have a mediator that understands and that knows our life so well. Every example in the Bible was put there by God because there was something about it that God wanted us to benefit from. He wanted us to profit from it in some way, to take something from it and put it into our lives. That's why all Scripture is inspired, and it's all profitable to us. Even those genealogies, right? There's a profit for that for us. For whatever things, the Bible tells us, for whatever things were written before, were written for our learning, that through the patience and comfort of the Scriptures, we might have hope. Romans chapter 15 and verse 4. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 2. And this is right after the writer of Hebrews has concluded that great chapter in Hebrews 11 of those great men of faith. Great examples for us. He says, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. He says, look at all these witnesses that we have around us. We can look at them and see what we need to do, right? Then we need to lay aside the weights that are holding us back. We need to put aside those things that are keeping us from running. You know, when you see those guys come out in the Olympics, right, for the running, for those races, they come out in their jumpsuits, but they don't wear those jumpsuits, do they, when they race? Kind of wish they would. But they don't, because it encumbers them. It will hold them back. So they lay those things aside so that they can run the race. And Paul often uses sports analogies. You know, it seems like Paul was a little bit of a sports fan. He says, you know, guys, you got to lay these things aside so that you can run the race. You got to lay aside that sin that ensnares you. Look at these guys. Look at these examples in this chapter before the writer of Hebrews says. Look at how they did that. And they ran the race. So I want us to think for just a few moments and look at a few examples of men in the Bible. Some men that we would do good to follow in their example. We can look back to Abraham and see a great example of faith. In fact, Abraham is called the father of the faithful. He is a man that did incredible things and constantly throughout his life showed his faith time and time again. Showed how that he really trusted God, even when he couldn't see the logical outcome for it. He still trusted God. It began, as Hebrews 11, 8 through 10 tells us, it began with him leaving Ur, right? Where he had grown up, where he had lived, and leaving and going because no other reason other than God said to go. And it is clear that he did not know where he was going. He did not know what lay in the future. You know, if I'm going somewhere, I'd like to know where I'm going. You know, one old preacher told me, And this was about leaving congregations. But he said, never announce your departure till you have a destination, right? That's a dangerous thing to announce your departure before you have a destination sometimes. Well, Abraham didn't have a destination, at least that he knew of. But he was more than willing to depart. He was a man who had showed great faith in accepting God's promises. God promised him great things. He said, I'll give you the land that you're in, right? Over and over, God promises him great things, promises him the land, promises him descendants that are multitudes like the stars of the sky and the sands of the seashore. And yet here was a man that was childless at more than 75 years old. How can we believe the promises when it seems so difficult for them to come true? Abraham did. And maybe when we really think about Abraham, we think about the choices that he made of showing faith. I guess the biggest one that comes is offering of Isaac, right? You know, God's been promising you all this time. He's told you that he's going to have a son, that he's going to have these multitudes of descendants, and God finally gives you a son. He says, Ishmael is not it. And Ishmael is not going to be the one that I'm going to bless. So he gives you this son. When this son is somewhere in his teens, God says, take him out and sacrifice him. I don't know about y'all. I have a child. I have a son. That'd be a hard one. That'd be a hard one. God told him that, and the next morning, early in the morning, Abraham got up and he went to do it, right? He didn't think about it. He didn't have to mull around on it for a week or so to see if he had the faith. He just went and did what God said. Why? Because the Bible tells us that he believed God could give him back. He had faith in God. That if God had promises through this man, these promises would be kept. And he was willing to go through on that sacrifice. Had God not stayed his hand, he would have offered his son, just as God later would offer his son, but would not hold his hand back in that sacrifice. Considering his family and his environment, it is remarkable that Abraham had the faith that he did. Joshua chapter 24 and verses 2, 14 and 15 makes it clear that when Abraham lived in Ur, that his family worshipped other gods. And yet here is a man that somewhere in this world of paganism that he lived in, steeped in paganism, he found this incredible faith that we still talk about to this day. It's an amazing thing to behold when you study the life of Abraham. Faith did not come any easier, though, I can tell you, for Abraham than it does for me and you. He didn't somehow get given to him in appeal form. He had to earn it. He had to grow it. He had to strengthen it every day. So we see Abraham as this great example of faith. We go a couple of generations later and we see Joseph, right? And Joseph is a great example for us of forgiveness. We think about Joseph in a lot of things, but really Joseph, when you get right down to it, the biggest thing you can take from Joseph, the example you can take from Joseph, is what a man of forgiveness he was. Because there are a few things harder in this life than forgiving others. Oh, we're big on getting forgiveness. We're not so big on giving it. It's hard because my feelings are involved. You've hurt them. You've stomped on them. And I'm not sure I want to get over that right now. I'd like to stew just a little bit longer. I'd like to sit around and be miserable a little bit longer because I just haven't been miserable enough yet, right? Forgiveness is tough. And you know, we see this forgiveness in Joseph not once, but several times. We see it as he suffers injustice after injustice after injustice. He is the son of a rich man. He is the preferred son of a rich man. Now that's his problem all its own, and that's another lesson. And he was a spoiled brat. That's another lesson too, okay? Joseph's got other lessons, but we're going to try to focus on the good. Me even being a spoiled brat, let me tell you, my brothers and sisters were hard to live with. I never thought about selling them unless they offered me a lot of money. Actually, I was the youngest. I probably was the topic of discussion about selling a few times. You know, to have your brothers, number one, to have nine of them want to kill you. And if it hadn't have been for the oldest brother, they would have. But he kept them from doing it, and they sold him instead into slavery, and he became a slave in Egypt. And you know, you think, boy, now that's enough to just cripple somebody for life, right? I mean, he's messed up for life. His family life was awful, obviously. But no, he keeps on going. And then he's there and he's working for Potiphar and he's doing a great job and everything that his hand touches prospers. And then comes Potiphar's wife. She wants to commit fornication with him, adultery with him. And he says no. And she falsely accuses him of attempted rape and he is thrown in jail again. This poor guy, surely he can't go another day. I mean, he's been sold by his brothers. He's been thrown into jail for something he did not do. No. He continues to succeed. In the jail, he becomes so trusted and such a good person there inside the jail that he becomes the steward. They don't even worry about Joseph. And while he is there, he interprets dreams for these two guys and he asks the one that returns to Pharaoh, he says, just remember me when you return to Pharaoh. And the guy goes back and promptly forgets, right? He spends 2 years there before Pharaoh calls him to interpret the dream. You know, I would think here is the nation that has falsely accused me, falsely imprisoned me, bought me, and this is the nation that has ignored me. I shouldn't like Egypt too much. I don't really care what happens to Egypt. And yet, for Joseph, when it came to the time that he interpreted the dream and became the grand vizier of Egypt, he did not say, I hope Egypt starves to death. No, he prepares that nation to have more food than it would even need. He takes care of that nation. He makes that nation the most powerful and wealthy nation on the earth because of his efforts. And yet these are the people that mistreated him too. Let me tell you why Joseph was a success. Let me tell you why it never ruined his life with all these things that happened to him in his life is because he had a heart of forgiveness. He wasn't going to dwell on it. He wasn't going to live in it. He was going to live for God. People spend their entire lives living in what has happened to them or how they've been mistreated, and they waste their entire life because they can't get past it. Because they can't let it go. Because they can't move on for God. Joseph was not such a man. And I guess we see it best on that day as he's passing out grains. We're now in the 7 years of the skinny cows, right? 7 years of famine after the 7 years of plenty. And his brothers show up. And they don't recognize Joseph. They don't know who he is. But he knows them. And he is a man in position to do whatever he wants to them, isn't he? He is a man with the power to imprison them. He doesn't need a charge. He's the man that has the ability to put them to death if he so chooses. Here they come. Joseph does not do that, though. But he does. He does work the system a little bit to get Benjamin there, right? He does use his power, but it's not to be spiteful, but he wants to see his brother Benjamin. He wants him there too. And finally, he is allowed to come. Jacob relents when Reuben promises him his children if anything happens. So they come. And he finally reveals himself to his brothers, and rightfully so, his brothers are afraid, aren't they? Joseph said, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to put myself in the place of God. In fact, he does that twice, doesn't he? Because when his dad died, when their father died, they all thought, oh yeah, he's just been waiting. He didn't want to kill us because of dad. And now dad's gone. He's going to kill us for sure. And Joseph said, I'm not going to do any such thing. What you did to me was evil. But God used it for good, didn't he? I'm going to make my life something God can use. I'm not going to let it be drugged down and held down by the evil that someone might do to me. I'm going to be something that overcomes it. And that began with his forgiveness. Then we can move forward a little bit more. And we can see Moses. Moses is a great example of leadership. The greatness of Moses' leadership of Israel is all the more impressive when we remember that he was reluctant at first to accept the job, right? He didn't want it. He didn't feel like he was worthy of it. And there's some that argue, did he not really feel like he's worthy? He just not want it. I tell you, I've seen the job that he did. I've read about it. I wouldn't want it either. He stood there before the burning bush and gave excuse after excuse, which God rebutted every time. You know, for those that say they can't sing and won't sing because they don't sing pretty, I'll remind you, or somebody says, I can't speak well, I remind you of what God told Moses, right? God said, who made your mouth? If I made your mouth, even if I made it sound awful, I like it. I made it. So if I ask you to sing to me with that mouth, you sing to me with that mouth. Don't worry about what anybody else thinks. You know, anybody that has to sit in front of me knows that that is really something I believe in a great deal. But you know, Moses was not asked to do an easy job. He was not asked to go. You know, it would be one thing if you're asked to take Solomon's throne, right? That's one kind of leadership. You know, go take Solomon's throne. Yeah, gladly. I'd love all the gold and all the riches and all the power. Sure. No, that's not what he's given. Well, I want you to go lead a bunch of slaves against the most powerful nation in the world. That's what I want you to go do. And then I want you to take and spend the rest of your life wandering around out in the desert with these people that don't even much like you and certainly don't like me and are going to constantly rebel and cause trouble. That's your job, Moses. Y'all want that one? You know, when I think about that and I read what Hebrews 11 says, that he gave up the riches of Egypt to become a slave, to be joined with slaves. I'm amazed at this man and his willingness to lead and how he led these people. He was a leader of great compassion. He was a leader that loved the people. And even though they treated him awful. You know, when God wanted to destroy them on several occasions, completely destroy them. He even said, I'll destroy them. Keep my promises to Abraham through you. Moses said, don't do that. When God was striking them dead in mass, he fell on his face and begged God to stop. What a leader. And they rebelled against him. They called him names. They did all kinds of things. But he still led with the love and the compassion that a man that God spoke to face, as God said, I spoke to him face to face. God didn't seem to speak to anybody like he spoke to Moses. There was a relationship there that was unique. And that leadership that he gave made all the difference. Those people wouldn't have made it out of the desert if it wasn't for good leadership by Moses and his faithfulness to God. Then we see David. As we go up into the nation of Israel, David is a great example of courage. You know, they say there are several types of courage, and as I look at the text, David just seems to have them all. He has the courage to stand by God. He has the courage to say he's wrong. Read Psalm 51. That's a courageous verse, or courageous text, isn't it? Oh, how my sin is ever before me. He was willing to admit it to everybody, what he had done. But I think about David and Goliath as he goes out there. And you know, he had such confidence, didn't he? Because David understood that courage was based in one thing, and courage was based in God. He said, the battle is the Lord's. I'm just his instrument. Folks, we need to remember that today. We may face overwhelming odds. Yes, the vast majority of people around us are not godly. The vast majority of people around us do not want to have anything to do with religion. A lot of people around us are actively and seeking to stop Christianity. But the battle belongs to the Lord. Last time I checked, he hasn't lost one yet. He's not going to stop winning because the victory is assured. But David understood that. He understood, you know, he said, God has delivered the lion and the bear, right? He will deliver this Philistine into my hands. Let me tell you what, God has delivered the church from empires, from Roman Empire, from other empires that have tried to destroy it. And let me tell you what, He'll deliver us from whatever we may face. That's where we find real courage, is in our faith in God. And then last of all, we see Jesus, who is our perfect example. Everything that Jesus ever did was admirable. Everything that Jesus did was worthy of emulation. In John chapter 13, after he washed the disciples' feet, he said, "For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. I have left you an example." Now certainly, he was talking specifically about that event of washing their feet, teaching them to serve one another, to put aside their pride. But Jesus' life could be summed up in that statement as well. That He has left an example for us, as Peter would tell us. Jesus declares, or He shows to us, describes for us the Father in heaven. It says, "And the Word became flesh," in John chapter 1, beginning with verse 14, "The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." And then you drop to verse 18. "No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, He has declared Him." He has shown Him to us. We see Him in Jesus Christ. People say, "I just want to find God." You look to Jesus Christ if you want to find God. Remember in John chapter 14, "Just show us the Father and that will suffice. Have I been with you so long? If you've seen me, you've seen the Father," right? If you're looking for God, you're looking for Jesus. Because you can't see God any other way. Because He is, as Hebrews 1:3 says, the brightness of His glory and the express image of His person. Living the Christian life amounts to a continual striving to learn and to do the Lord's will. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 17, Paul writes, "Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is." He did it. He taught it. We need to learn it and live it as well. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15 says, "But sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you a reason for the hope that is in you with meekness and fear." Sanctify the Lord God in your hearts. Put Him there. Put that example there. And you will never have a problem telling someone why you are a Christian. You will know. It'll be ever so evident. Doing the Lord's will comes down to following the Lord's example. I don't want to get into, you know, the little, what would Jesus do in this situation or that situation. But it is about doing in every situation what we are convinced that Jesus Christ would do according to His Word. Or as Paul told the Colossians, to let all that you do in word or deed be done in the name of the Lord. To be actions that He would approve of according to what He has taught. You know, we sometimes use examples for the wrong reasons, don't we? How many of you have done this? You're caught doing something wrong. And all of you have done something wrong. So don't sit there and go, "Well, preacher, what do you mean?" You've all done something wrong. You're caught doing something wrong and you're called on it. And you go, "Well, so-and-so is doing it. So-and-so's..." Or you might even try to pull one worse. "This person's doing worse than I'm doing." As if that somehow absolves you. Wow, they're worse than you. But that doesn't make you any better. Sometimes we use examples for the wrong reasons. Sometimes, you know, it's not about being wrong. We demonstrate it. We use examples to demonstrate our superiority, don't we? "If you've seen how good I am, yeah, all these other people, they don't come to church as much as I do. They don't do as much at church as I do. They don't serve the Lord as much as I do. Have you seen all these people that are not doing anything? Man, it's good to be me." Reminds me of the Pharisee, doesn't it, you? God. Oh, how good it is to be me. I'm glad I'm not like him. You know, instead of using examples that way, we ought to use the examples of others to discover areas where some adjustment, or some improvement needs to be made in our lives. All of the great examples in the Bible, with the exception of the Lord Himself, were all people with flaws. You notice that? Moses had his flaws. Moses, you know, just sitting there arguing with God. Now, my mama would have slapped my head if I'd have back-talked her, but he did. He argued with God at the burning bush. There's no way around that. He struck the rock when he was supposed to speak to it, right? Moses had his flaws. He was a great man. Abraham had his flaws, didn't he? She's not my wife. She's my sister. Oh, the little white lie. You know, Abraham laughed. And so did Sarah. You know, we kind of don't assign it to both of them, but both of them laughed at the promise of a son. So they had their flaws. Joseph certainly had his flaws. We already talked about it. He was a brat. David. Where to begin, right? Man of flaws. So you know, these examples that we see in the Bible, they had faults and they had weaknesses just as we did, as we do in our lives, but they were people who did what each of us can do. They overcame those flaws with faith in God. They turned their lives over to God and let God help them defeat their flaws. There are great examples of faith living in every generation, and we ought to learn from those living in our own. There are great examples of faith in this room tonight. We should learn from them. Oh, we all think we're so smart. Let me tell you what, there's people that have walked the path a lot longer than you have. There are people with some wisdom that we need. You know, I was so blessed last April to be able to go and spend time and to eat supper each evening with Brother David Farr, Brother Phil Sanders. Oh, I've got so much to learn. I love those men for teaching me. And there are people here that you need to look to, people that have demonstrated faith and ability. And of course, as we look to others, living, those that are around us, and we're going to follow their example, we do need to discern something. We need to discern what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 1. Imitate them only as they imitate Christ. All the other examples are worthless. If it's not a person imitating Christ, they're not worthy of your time or your efforts to follow them. You know, whether the examples are those in the Bible or the ones that we follow are those in the Bible or those living in our own time, their message comes down to basically one thing, that it is possible to live a strong, faithful, and holy life in a sinful world. We can endure. We can overcome with Jesus Christ. It is still true that I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And unless I have that kind of a positive attitude that I can do it, I probably won't. But I have to determine that Christ will get me through and give my whole to Him. That's the example of the men that we see in the Bible. James said, you've heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and He is merciful. That's an interesting thought, isn't it? That as Job was going through, the Lord had an intended end for Job. And Job made it possible for that end to come about by his faith. God has an intended end for you. Will you allow it to be possible by the faith of your life? How you live for Him. How you overcome. All these men we've seen did great things. They were just men. But with God, they were great men. And we can be too. This evening, if you're not a child of God, we hope and pray that you'll make the decision to become one. For that is the first step to this great life of overcoming, this great life of victory that's guaranteed in Jesus Christ. you're a child of God, maybe you've forgotten these examples. Maybe you've forgotten the other examples in the Bible of living faithful. It's not just enough to say, I love God. I must live that I love so that He can use me to do great things. If you need to change your life tonight, we hope and pray that you'll do so. If we can assist you with any spiritual need that you have, we hope and pray that you will come as we stand, as we sing.